AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for the Farmer Forum, but it's also the first Wednesday of the month, and that means it's time to talk about the state of the ag economy. And don't look now, but new crop spring wheat futures are pushing through $8.
Live from the foothills of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Jim Mintert of Purdue University. Then it's our Farmer Forum, panelists Ken McCauley and Chad Lehman. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, the Farmer Forum, yo, yo. Ken and Chad, they both got some things that they want to talk about on this morning's free-for-all.
I hope you brought your crowbar to get a word in edgewise.
No, I don't need to. I don't need to. We can just let these guys go. That'll be great. And our monthly checkup of the ag economy with Jim Mintert. I'm looking forward to that. They asked a couple of new questions again. I want to get into those. But attitudes are changing. Attitudes are changing. And when you go through the month of May, like we did with corn prices backing off and soybean prices in the month of May, the new crop market was higher.
Yeah. So, well, slightly. Yeah.
Yeah, well, 33 cents.
I was thinking of the weekly last week, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No.
So
right.
I think it's the expectation that, okay, well, we've pushed this market so far to the upside, we're going to back off. Therefore, I'm not as optimistic as I was a month ago. But I'm assuming. I'm making assumptions there. I want to talk to Jim about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. On the Ag Economy Barometer, where they, you know, post it, the report itself, the title uses both the words sharply and bullish in reference to two different things. I wonder what they could be. I'm going to stick around and find out. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, I kind of figure that you do want to ask a few questions about that bullish attitude that is still out there. Mm-hmm. Get you ahead for the month,
possible,
doesn't it, when we
possible.
Do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of does, yeah.
All right. And as I mentioned, spring wheat futures sharply higher again this morning, up 25 cents. Got the September contract pushing through $8. I think there's growing concern about the frost damage that may have happened to that spring wheat crop and the weather forecast that is very dry. So we'll see if we can find out anything on that at all. All right, buddy, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, the Federal Reserve's Beige Book report will be released this afternoon. The focus will be the highest on issues relative to inflation and what conditions in the 12 Federal Reserve districts have to say about how businesses view the current price situation. Fed officials have mostly taken the view inflation will be transitory, but some have also noted that should the situation become more entrenched and push inflation above the Fed's 2% target, the U.S. Central Bank would act as needed. Chip.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about, was it 3.1 or something? Was the figure that was thrown out yesterday.
Exactly. And the average being something that might be a misleading thing to look at. But in this economy, I think maybe a little bit of heat in the economy will balance out later. I think it will.
President Biden will meet with Senator Shelley Moore Capito today to continue negotiations over a jobs and infrastructure package. The planned meeting comes as Democrats are striking a more urgent tone on negotiations. Biden's meeting follows a new memo issued by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urging Democrats to promote the parts of the Biden package that are unrelated to infrastructure, which Republicans oppose. Something to watch here, Chip. Oil prices rose to their highest level of the pandemic period as Brent crude futures traded over $70 a barrel for the first time in 2.5 years. The rise reflects expectations of greater fuel demands as the U.S. and Chinese economies show signs of recovery heading into the summer that builds on the confidence of OPEC Plus countries who agreed to continue easing oil supply restrictions through July. And in a somewhat related note, and I don't think this is quite yet related to the price increase. In fact, we've got, so we talked about Brent above 70. Here's WTI, the July contract now at 68.35, out to the November around 66.5. Plans for the first ever drilling program in the pristine 19 million acre site are on hold. That's up in Alaska. The decision is the latest twist in more than 30 years of fighting over how to manage some of the U.S.'s last unspoiled wilderness. China's economic czar Liu He held a virtual meeting with U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen this morning, days after Liu's first conversation on trade issues with U.S. Trade Rep Catherine Tai. Both sides agreed China-U.S. economic relations were very important, and discussions included the macroeconomic situation, as well as bilateral and multilateral cooperation, quote, in an attitude of equality and mutual respect, according to a brief statement by state news agency Xinhua. You got to love it when China talks like that, don't you?
Well, and the administration officials, Yellen and Tai, both described the conversations as frank. When that happens, there's usually... There was usually some conflict in the conversation.
Well, and quickly here, farmers are joining investors and other bidders to drive up prices for farmland. Prices for good quality farmland are approaching levels of 2014 at the end of the last sustained commodity boom. We'll get more from Jim Mintert on that coming right up.
Absolutely. Chip. Yeah, and farmers are leading the bidding on it.
They are. That's the thing.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip. Good morning.
Good morning to you. You know, when I look at the new technology that is available to producers out there and areas where we can increase our efficiency, look at what's happening with the sprayers right now, right?
Oh, you're so spot on, Chip. And, you know, yesterday was actually my 15-year anniversary with Farm Journal. And it caused a little reflection, right?
Did you start when you were 12?
I did. I did. I just actually use really expensive eye cream. That's my secret. But anyway, I was reflecting on covering machinery specifically for that long, and you talk about increased efficiencies and, you know, there's a couple ways to get it, right? You can go wider and bigger, and that's definitely been a trend for planters and sprayers and everything. But then you can also get more precise. And really, in the last year, 2 years, we've seen some of that evolution. I think about like the folks at Rantizo and their drone-based spraying really being accurate. I think about what was introduced from John Deere in this past year with their first see and spray technology using actual real-time monitoring of green material and only applying where there's green material in the field. And then just earlier this week, AGCO, Bosch, BASF, and Raven introduced a new partnership looking at precise spraying of weeds. And I should note, a lot of this application technology is really focusing on that herbicide pass, right? And effectively using those herbicides by only targeting those weeds.
Very cool. Very cool. And, you know, if we can use this technology to manage down the amount that we are applying out there, yet still get the same control, we're getting out in front of the rules and regulations that might be coming later.
It's a lot is possible. Yep.
Exactly. Good stuff, Margie. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Dr. Jim Mintert from Purdue up next here on AgriTalk. Talking now with Greg Sauter. He's the founder of 360 Yield Center. Greg, another interesting planting season. How things looking there in central Illinois?
Well, we had a really nice window in early April for beans, but a pretty narrow April window for corn. You know, it turned cold and wet as we moved into May, and we've had some big rains every 6 days lately, and I mean big rain events of over 2 inches.
Wow. You know, the market likes to say that rain makes grain, but what does the big rains do to the corn crop?
I know there are a lot of areas that are in desperate need of a rain, but around here, these big drenching rains right here planting make me really concerned about our nitrogen program. You know, an inch of rain moves nitrogen down about 6 inches, and we've had 6 to 8 inches. So if I had a fall applied nitrogen or a broadcast weed and feed, I would be concerned about where has the nitrogen gone.
Okay, so the big yields come from the grain fill period in August. It sounds like you're afraid the crop is going to run out of nitrogen before grain fill.
Well, this sure looks like a year we need to be ready for the 360 wide drop on a side dress bar or sprayer so we can resupply nitrogen. But every year, wet or dry, wide drop lets us adjust our rates to match the conditions. So with this rain, we can replace some lost nitrogen. But for the guys up north that are dry, they could trim their nitrogen rates to match the yield potential.
So how do we know if we've got adequate nitrogen to finish the crop?
Well, you got to go out and pull some samples. You can either run them through the lab or our 360 soil scan to know our nitrate levels. And, you know, once we drop below that 8 or 9 parts per million, we jump in the hay if the wide drop and we start resupplying.
You know, it's pretty amazing how wide dropping has become a recognized practice out there, Greg.
You know, we have planting, post-spraying season, now the wide drop season.
Thank you, Greg. That's Greg Souder, founder of 360 Yield Center. You can learn more about wide drop season at 360yieldcenter.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AgriWeb, the digital ranch management solution that puts your whole operation right at your fingertips. Get your first month free by visiting agriweb.com. That's AgriWeb with 2 B's /Drovers today.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello.
Let's bring in Jim Minter, Purdue University Ag Economist. And, of course, he is the author of the Ag Economy Barometer, joins us monthly right here on the first Wednesday of the month. Jim, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Great. Good to talk with you as well, Chip.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and read the opening paragraph of the press release that you put out yesterday morning. The Ag Economy Barometer declined 20 points in May to 158, which is the lowest barometer reading since September 2020, when the index stood at 156. Both the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations declined this month. Jim, what's going on? Have attitudes turned on us?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think there's a lot behind that. And I guess the first thing I'd say is maybe, even though the headline was it was a sharp decline on a month-to-month basis, mm-hmm. maybe don't get too carried away with the negativity. Because if you compare the barometer this month to the release that we had a year ago, we're 55 points higher than we were a year ago. So I think that's one point to keep in mind. Yep. The other thing is, if you look at a chart of the barometer and you exclude the last few months, we're still near the very highest levels we've ever had, except for the last few months since we started collecting data back in 2015. But nevertheless, it was a sharp decline on a month-to-month basis. And I think there's probably several things behind that. One thing that I think my co-author, Michael Langmar, likes to point out is just a reflection of the uncertainty that exists in the marketplace right now. If you think about it from a standpoint of both crops and livestock, we have a tremendous amount of uncertainty, even though prices, especially on the crop side, are very profitable levels. There's a lot of uncertainty about how long they might be around. And I think it's important to keep in mind that for a lot of farmers, even though prices are very high right now, they didn't have a chance to sell very much at those high prices.
Right.
The bulk of their sales from 2020 were made at much lower prices. So the question yep. in their mind is, will I get a chance to sell a significant portion not only of my 2021 crop, but will it continue into 2022? So I think that reflection of uncertainty showing up out there. And then
yep.
we had one other point that we pointed out in the report, and that is this divergence of opinion between people looking at the crop sector versus yep. the livestock sector.
Right.
There's a lot more positivity in the crop sector than there is in the crop in the livestock sector. In fact, we saw that divergence over several months now, but it really widened in the month of May. And I think that was a contributing factor as well.
Right. You know, and Jim, when the overall barometer was peaking out just under 180 earlier this year, don't you think, or was there some relief rally in the index at that time? Because we were it was a trampoline bounce off the lows that we had basically a year ago right now.
Well, it was a trampoline bounce, and of course it was so unexpected. I mean, we go back to that August crop report,
Yeah.
And the negativity that a lot of us had when we read the report, and then the next day the rally pretty much got underway, right? And it's been Katie barred the door since then. And so that gave us that tremendous rebound. I don't think we would have seen a rebound to the magnitude that we saw without that tremendous rally in the crop prices, and to some extent pork as well. So that really fueled it. And so, you know, I just don't want to get too negative here, because I think if you look at the barometer overall, people are pretty still positive. And, of course, that's reflected. I heard you guys in the opening comments. That's reflected in what people are telling us about farmland values, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jim, I want to just hit on a point here quick, and I kind of want to be optimistic here. I feel like there's room for it. I'm looking at the expectations for the farm's financial performance, down 12 points. Sure, off the record high, but still the second highest reading since the financial performance question was first posed. You know, kind of a similar deal with the Farm Capital Investment Index. Yes, lower, but still at a fairly elevated level. Is it all right to not be too pessimistic here?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And if you look, for example, the question that we asked started asking here back in 20 about farm machinery purchases, that one's kind of interesting. If you notice at the detail there, the percentage of people that tell us they're going to increase the machinery purchases held constant, right? It was at 14% in April. It was at 14% in May. The change was the group of people who switched over from saying, I'm going to hold my machinery purchases constant, to maybe I'm going to reduce them. And that was a group that maybe is being influenced perhaps by the tightness of supply and the availability, their inability perhaps to get what they want. We had a new question this month that focused specifically on constructing buildings and grain bins.
Right.
And we didn't know what to expect when we posed that. That's a question we're going to keep in the survey on an ongoing basis now. And 59% said lower. What we don't really know for sure is, why did they say lower? Is it because construction costs have gone through the roof, right? And they're having a trouble maybe lining up a crew to even come in and put something up. So there's a lot of positivity out there, but people are reacting to the change that we've seen and saying, hey, maybe I can't do some of the things I want to do. But the one thing they're going for is farmland, right? And we show that not only on the farmland value expectations, but also on cash rental rates.
Yeah, and what I found interesting, it kind of made me scratch my head just a little bit. Last month we saw the long-run farmland value expectations and the short-run, we've seen them flip as far as attitudes go, where those values are headed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think the real key there is both of them are very positive. You know, we did see that kind of a one-month blip in that long-run index, and truthfully, that was a surprise. I didn't really expect to see that before we posed the question. I think last month we talked about that. We said maybe that's a reflection of people having some uncertainty about, you know, how long the good times are going to last. Well, they came back this month and said, we think they're going to last a while. But basically, both of those indexers are saying we're bullish on farmland values.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to continue. And it's going to be interesting to watch that. And then that follow-up question where we asked about cash rental rates.
Right.
You know,
yes. Yep.
It wasn't a surprise that the majority of corn and soybean farmers said that they expect to see cash rental rates rise. But if there was a surprise in that question, when we asked the follow-up, so and that only went to the people who said they expect the rates to rise, the magnitude of the rise was pretty surprising, right? It was pretty evenly split between people that said they think rates are going to go up 5% to as much as 10% and the group that said 10% or more. And if you look at history on cash rental rates in 1 year's time, rates don't move by 10% or more very often. That's a big move.
Right. Okay, I want to move forward. I got a couple of more things that I want to hit here. Reading from the press release, producers' expectations for good versus bad times in U.S. agriculture have undergone a marked shift. For example, in May, just 27% of the respondents said they expect good times in U.S. agriculture during the next 5 years, the lowest reading in the survey's history and down 12% from, or 12 points from a month earlier, Jim.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I mean, I didn't expect to see that kind of a move. And that's why we kind of started digging deeper and we said, well, part of that's because of this divergence in opinion between what's going on in crops versus what's going on in livestock. Yeah. And I think maybe you need to think a little bit about the demographics of our survey. So we focus on commercial producers, And then we use the Census of Agriculture to weight those by enterprises. And so on the livestock side, the largest group of people we have are beef producers.
Okay.
And I think that explains some of that negativity we're seeing in the coming out of that livestock segment.
What about
so many concerns about beef, right?
Yeah, and what about the tax proposals that are out there? Is that having an influence on those expectations?
I suspect it is, and I think it's probably having an influence, especially on the index of future expectations. And we've asked those questions on tax policy 2 months in a row now, and the results were almost identical. I mean, there was really no change to speak of on any of those questions. People, number one, are aware of the changes that are being discussed, and they're concerned about it. And, of course, we don't have a lot of details at this point. Nobody knows what exactly might get through Congress. But there's clearly some concern about it. And, you know, a lot of people in agriculture have made plans. Right? They've got plans in place. They're wondering, do I have to go back and change those? Is there a way to get around this? You know, it's going to be a lot of work for accountants.
Yeah. Well, I got a feeling the reason that the responses are about the same is because we know about the same about the tax plans right now as we did a month ago when the question was asked the first time, Jim. We need to see some movement on this.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess that's going to play out over the course of the summer. I think this is maybe a little bit of fuel for some of the ag groups to maybe contact their representatives and talk about the concerns that are out there.
Absolutely. What this does tell us is that it is on their radar and they are aware of the proposals. And hopefully they are contacting their lawmakers. Jim, this is another fun conversation. Thank you, man.
Thank you for the opportunity. Look forward to doing it again next month.
Absolutely. That is Dr. Jim Mintert from Purdue University. That is where he is an ag economist and is the author of the Ag Economy Barometer. Okay, when we come back, we got the Farmer Forum fired up. Chad Lehman, Ken McCauley, right here, AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. At the open of the show, I said, boy, look out. New crop spring wheat futures pushing through $8. Backing off the highs quite a bit here. What's going on?
Well, I'm backing off the highs, but the support's coming from the spring wheat crop ratings, which are poor to begin with, and then they dropped again yesterday. And so that's the support. Obviously, the soil moisture situation up in the northern plains is lacking, to say the least. And so that crop's going to need some timely rains. The reason it's backed off is because the corn market, we're running into some mid-morning selling pressure here in corn.
All right, what's going on there?
Well, I think just more than anything, it's more money flow. But, you know, we traded okay through the overnight hours and early daytime trade, kind of two-sided there. Didn't really find a whole lot of buyer interest. And as a result, we are seeing a little bit of selling pressure start to pick up here mid-morning.
Okay, and we still, soybeans are still trading about a dime higher, but we've got meal trading lower and soybean oil sharply higher. Again today, it looks like that market's ready to make a move to a new high there. Take us over to livestock trade.
Well, cattle market yesterday, pretty rough day there with the JBS stuff. Some of those JBS plants are coming back online, at least partially, it sounds like. And so we're getting a little bit of relief rally in the futures with the front end of live cattle sharply higher. Feeder cattle, they're reacting to the move down in corn here mid-morning. And then in the hog market, facing some what is now heavy selling pressure on a corrective pullback there. So, I think we need to continue to watch the fundamentals in hogs, but just some money coming out of the long side right now.
Got it. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Hey, Chip, you ever wonder if there's a mashup out there between, say, the Commodores and Ronnie James Dio, perhaps? You know?
I'm sure there is, dude. But
I
would almost guarantee that that version of Crazy Train is straight from Ken McCauley's playlist from when he's down at the Ozarks. Isn't that about right, Ken?
Oh, Chip, it's the 60s down there.
How are you, Ken?
Doing good. We're just starting to load some beans out, and just like everything goes, things just quit working. So I'm just sitting here in the pickup watching them try to unplug everything. So.
Oh, that's disappointing. Good grief. Yeah, all right. That's Ken. Yep, that's Ken McCauley, Northeast Kansas. We've also got Chad Lehman from Illinois on the line with us. Chad, welcome to the Farm Reform. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet.
Sitting in a sprayer spraying corn, so.
Okay. All right, good. You're busy. And, well, everybody was busy this morning. But, guys, normally I would go straight to a crop report. But after that conversation with Mintert, I want to kind of keep that flowing here because we talked about the level of awareness on some of the tax proposals that are out there and how it might be having an impact on farmers' expectations of their financial well-being going forward. And Ken, there's a lot of people that are aware of it, at least in the response to the question that Purdue University puts out there. And I know you've been you've been using your loud words when talking about some of these tax proposals, Ken.
Yes, I have. And I always appreciate Jim's opinion on these things because he really knows what he's doing. And I listened to that, even though we were unplugging this thing. But yeah. Tell you what, I think everybody needs to realize that they've got to get vocal and make these elected officials understand that November of 22 is coming fast. These things, they got to get their attention. We all do, because this is crazy. It's affecting farmers' long-term goals, whether you hear it or anybody hears it or not, because people, I think 1 to 2, I'm not 5 years out, but I think the next couple of years farmers are pretty confident about what's going on. But thinking 5 years out, I think they're really scared of what's going to happen, especially if you're ill health and looking at retirement or whatever.
Yep. Chad, you're not looking at retirement, but are those tax plans weighing on your thoughts going forward?
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking more at transitioning to the next generation. And so all these plans that you sort of carefully have put into place the last 4 or 5 years and paid attorneys to put together, you wonder just how valid they're going to be in the next couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Ken, I mean, it makes your timing look awfully good, doesn't it?
Well, it does, Chip, but I keep telling people, and I told Senator Moran this the other day, that this talk about the stepped-up basis and capital gains being pushed out and farmers are going to be held harmless is a smokescreen. It's when you've got a debt out there against you on a estate tax or a gift or anything, it's hanging over your head and it's going to be an anvil around agriculture's neck.
Yeah. Ken, is it the step-up in basis or is it the reduction in the exemption that worries you the most?
Well, to me, it's a reduction in the exemption. The stepped-up basis, if you're not going to sell, it really doesn't matter. And actually, a good friend from Illinois told me a long time ago, he said, you give them that low basis and they won't be able to afford to sell it. And that's exactly true. And so I worry more about if the next wave of this, they lower the exemption and drop it to 3 or 4 or 2, whatever, then you're really hung out to dry. You can't really do anything.
Right. All right.
Both are important. Very though.
Exactly. So the bottom line on this, guys, if you're not up to speed on what's going on with the tax proposals, get up to speed and make your opinions known to lawmakers, to your lawmakers. And we can't back off on it. I said something to Representative Sam Graves out of Missouri about this a couple of weeks ago already, that, hey, you know what? This isn't going to happen, is it? It's not. And he basically scolded me on the air for saying, no, let's not go that route. Let's go forward with the assumption that this is still in the plans and we need to make your opinions known. And I think he's exactly right on it. And as a matter of fact, I'm more concerned about these proposals being included in the plans now than I was 2 weeks ago. So we need to keep going on this. I need to switch gears. Chad is a hog producer there in Illinois. The JBS situation, Chad, did that have an impact on you?
Yeah, it sure has, Chip. Got the notification on Monday, on Memorial Day, that they've had the cyber attack. All loads on hold for the week. And so loads canceled yesterday. So Beardstown, Illinois, would obviously be the closest JBS plant to us. They did take a load today from us, canceled the load tomorrow, and to play it by ear. So, you know, we were down, for kill yesterday, about 95,000 head.
Yeah.
As compared to last week. And so I think what they're going to do, they're not sure about how the equipment's going to work. So they told us they're going to pay us grade and yield the average of our last five loads, because I don't think they're sure how the equipment's going to work. So they're going to kind of see how today goes, but they've already canceled tomorrow's load. So it doesn't look like a great rebound anyway.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Reminds me a little bit of last year, Chip.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that's probably what's in the hog market right now with the pressure on lean hog futures. Just the idea that if we back hogs up even for 3 days this week, Chad, it's going to take time to work through those supplies.
For sure. They didn't have an AM cutout, I don't think, yesterday. The PM showed up a few bucks, which is or not cutout, but cash was up $3. Yesterday, which was kind of surprising, because I thought this was going to really weigh on cash. But I can't see that this is real positive. You already got a couple Tyson plants not killing on Friday, and you got a holiday week, so I think we're going to back a few pigs up pretty quickly again.
I'm afraid you're right. I definitely am concerned that you're right. And you know, Ken, the cyber attack at JBS follows up the Colonial. This stuff is happening on our most important supplies out there, our fuel and our food.
Well, that's right, Chip. And this may be just testing the water to see, you know, what they can really do. But I told you earlier that. You know, they really need to segment these grids, and maybe they are and they still get in, but I just think these grids are so big. Think about the electric grid or, you know, a lot of different things that going to get screwed with, and it may not just be about money someday. So I think this is a pretty good wake-up call that, you know, maybe they can figure it out, and a few million dollars isn't near as big a deal as shutting the important part of the country down big deal.
And this is obvious. What I'm going to say is obvious, but it's true, and it needs to be said. You know, if they are paying the hackers, paying them their ransom to get the stuff out of their system, it proves that the business model works, and all that does is open us up to more down the line. And at some point, the message to Russia has got to be stronger than, you know, Mr. Putin, we don't allow that kind of bad actor to take root in the United States. You find them and get rid of them. It's got to be a stronger message than that. And you guys, Wiesmeyer and I talked about it yesterday morning. Jim Wiesmeyer and I talked about it on Signal to Noise. Jim's been told that that most of corporate America is vulnerable to this kind of an attack. How's that make you feel, Chad?
Well, that doesn't make me feel good. And I mean, with the administration's posture towards China, Russia, certainly looks to me like I'd be emboldened if I were either of those countries, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ken, I mean, I think you said it at the start. It feels like we're just starting to get exposure to what is going to become a more regular event down the road.
Well, I sure hope not, but it sure could be. The you know, that all these computers, they figured out little ways, and, you know, we may even be helping them do it, letting it get too wide. But, you know, there got to be an easy button on this, just like running a platter when it doesn't get the right signal. Everything stops. And that's there got to be an easy button somewhere.
That's right. That's right. Okay, we are having a conversation with Ken McCauley from Kansas, Chad Lehman from Illinois on the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by ACAM, America's Conservation Ag Movement. Learn more about it. Go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. We'll be back with more here in a moment.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, some of the sponsors of America's Conservation Ag Movement include American Farmland Trust, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers, Sanderson Farms, The Nature Conservancy, Valent USA, and the Farm Journal Foundation. And, of course, it is done with the financial and technical support of USDA's NRCS. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the Farmer Forum going today. Ken McCauley from Kansas, Chad Lehman from Illinois are with us. Chad, one other thing that I wanted to talk with you about from a hog producer's point of view is USDA's decision to not ask for an appeal of the federal court decision that is going to effectively slow down the processing at hog facilities or hog processing plants out there. It ultimately, Chad, it could reduce slaughter capacity by 2.5%, man.
Yeah, Chip, I feel like when I'm on with you, I've always got a gripe with something going on with the Packers. I hope it's not like a broken record, but this is a pretty big problem. It's especially locally bad because you take a Beardstown plant and it's more than 2.5% at a Beardstown plant. It's an average nationally of 2.5%.
Right.
It's like 10% at a Beardstown plant. So if they're killing 20% a day, all of a sudden, you know, or if they're killing 20,000 a day, all of a sudden they're getting it reduced by a couple thousand a day. That adds up pretty quick. And so it really adversely affects local plants like that. And so I am not sure it's going to change, though. It doesn't look like it's going to get challenged, does it?
Yeah, as far as I know, Chad, no. It's not going to be challenged. So when we get to the end of the month, some of these regional, well, in the areas where we're going to see the chain slow down, yeah, you're exactly right. It's like a 10% reduction. You get to some of those areas where two plants were pulling hogs, it's a 20% reduction in hog capacity. I mean, my goodness, Ken, I was feeling like USDA was really in step, and I was feeling like EPA was really in step, and for the most part I still do. What's your take now with what's going on with this, and is USDA, get, you know, kind of rate USDA's attitude
I want to comment just a little bit on this chain speed, Chip. A good friend cattle feeder told me, in real simple terms, he says, you're creating a shortage on the consumer end, which runs prices up, and you're creating a glut on the backside for hogs and cattle, and the Packers aren't going to complain about that.
Right.
This is just perfect for them for making money, but it's just a terrible thing to have a court. I mean, I understand why they did it. I think they're catering to the consumer and the environmental people that these guys on the line happen to work too hard, and it's not going to help. So I don't see a lot of relief in sight on that. But as far as USDA and EPA, the EPA changed quicker than USDA. But, you know, we've all watched Secretary Vilsack, and we know how he works, and he's okay, but he isn't a Trump nominee, and he's got different marching orders than Secretary Perdue had. So we've got to live with that. I'm not sure that the environmental thing's going to get any better. Well, I'm sure it's not going to get any better. Yep. We've got a lot of things a lot of carrots going to get dropped on us that are going to cost us a lot of money down the road.
Yep. I'm afraid that's right. You know, and Chad, the other thing that Jim Wiesmeyer said yesterday on Signal to Noise is that it looks like the labor unions got involved in this and really presented a strong, you know, presented their case to that federal judge. So it's as much a labor issue as it is anything else.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the intentions are going to, they're not going to help. They're not going to help who it's intended to help. It's going to hurt. It's certainly going to hurt the producers. And as if we really only have four or five Packers anymore of any size. And so it just highlights once again the consolidation in this business and how difficult these supply chain interruptions are going to be, and then we don't make them easier.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Okay, let's talk farming a little bit. Chad, what are conditions like over your way?
Yep, glad to. Central Illinois, for the most part, looks really good. We're looking forward to some heat coming our way. That's really what we need, is some heat to bring this crop along. But from a moisture standpoint, we're in good shape, which we feel we're grateful for, and feel bad for that upper Midwest and the Dakotas and so forth that are so dry. We've got, you know, everything's pretty well planted around here, and off to a very good start. So from an end user standpoint, I'm glad to see this crop get off to a good start.
Right, exactly. What about you, Ken? How are conditions over there in Northeast Kansas?
Well, you know, it we could be in the garden spot again with a couple of rains, Chip. I think corn's all sprayed as of today. A lot of guys, corn's, you know, starting to shade. Soybeans look really good. We've got some good subsoil moisture, but, you know, right now everything's going to start using a lot of water. So we're going to need timely rains, but, boy, we're off to a good start. And,
good.
You know, the markets are hoping that, like Chad said, that we have a good crop. But I think 4th of July is going to be a big, big time to be watching the markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it is dry up in the Northern Plains, but they got doggone cold over the weekend, and there was some more freeze damage up there than what I'm hearing that 20-25% of the beans might have to be replanted in North Dakota and some areas of South Dakota, Minnesota, and emergence was way ahead of average. That's why it's a bigger deal, and spring wheat crop may have been nipped too. Hopefully we're going to have an update on that this afternoon for you on the show. Ken, always good to talk with you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Chip. Enjoyed it.
You bet. Chad, thank you, brother. Always love talking with you.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Chip. Appreciate it.
You bet. That's Chad Lehman, Illinois. Ken McCauley from Kansas. Come back this afternoon. Sal Gilberte from Tucrium ETFs.